This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show with me, Hannah, Rob, and Edmi. How are we?
Very good.
Hi,
good morning.
We're doing good.
Yay, that's good.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
How was everyone's weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good.
Is that good? I love how sometimes you ask people a question, and I don't mean just you, Hannah. I mean, sometimes when you ask people a question, like how they are or whatever, and they just nod and go, yeah. I'm like, what does that mean? Anyways, my weekend was good. How was your weekend?
Yeah, mine was good. Attended the pre-Palestine protest and went to Camp Sovereignty as well. Watched senior lawman Uncle Murray George do his magic. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Mm, tell us more about that.
So he's come from far. In South Australia, his country is, and excuse me for not being able to pronounce it, but it's like far south west in the top corner. But yeah, he's come down to Melbourne and Nam, and did a special dance for everyone that was there, and it was beautiful. Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Should we give a little rundown of the show?
Yeah.
So first up, we're going to be continuing from last week, listening to the second part of the speeches from the rally supporting harm reduction and evidence-based healthcare, standing against stigma, scapegoating, and the criminalization of people who use drugs. And then secondly, we're going to be listening to a segment of a recent episode from the Indigenous Rights Radio's Cultural Survival podcast featuring Indigenous activist Simon Witboy. And he'll be discussing the contemporary racial discrimination and the place of the Khoi and San people in South Africa in the context of the International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And then after that, we're going to be hearing a speech from Basil El Gaddis at yesterday's Free Palestine rally. Basil is a Palestinian man, son of Palestinian refugee parents, a civil engineer and an active advocate in the Palestinian community in Nam. Yesterday's protest marked May Day and International Workers' Day.
Yeah, and then this show will end with a conversation between me and Kent Morris, who is a Barkindji man, and he has curated an art exhibit titled Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience. So we'll be talking to him about the exhibit, as well as the Torch program, which he is the creative director of. That's what we have coming up for the rest of the show.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty now. One, two, nitty-gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty-gritty, hoo-wee.
These are the news headlines for Monday, the 5th of May, 2025. The Liberal Party was unsuccessful in the 2025 federal election, not only losing dozens of seats, but Peter Dutton was also voted out of his marginal seat of Dixon by Labour's Ali France. The ALP is now an expanded majority in the House of Representatives. The Greens also saw historic gains with a record number of lower house seats. Adam Bandt said, quote, "Australians are sick of political cowardice. They want climate action, renters' rights, and billionaires to pay their fair share. This is a turning point. The people are ahead of the old parties, and we're here to deliver," end quote. Peter Dutton became the first sitting opposition leader in Australia to lose his seat in a federal election. The Liberal Party's primary vote collapsed to a record low of 31% with inner city electorates.
Also in news this week, Israel is looking to expand its military presence in Gaza with thousands of army reservists. Despite having killed more than 52,000 Palestinians, Israel Army Chief Eyal Zamir has made the announcement that Israel will do so in following Netanyahu's promise to continue the war to bring home Israeli captives. Quote, "This week we are sending tens of thousands of draft orders to our reserve personnel to intensify and expand our action in Gaza. We are increasing the pressure to return our people held captive in Gaza and defeat Hamas, and that operation in additional areas and destroy of all Hamas's infrastructure above and below the ground," end quote. Israel continue to face global backlash from and outrage for their conduct of genocide in Gaza and Palestine.
Also in headlines this week, and a brief content warning that this next headline mentions transphobia. Over 100 football clubs and related groups across the UK have signed an open letter to publicly oppose the UK Football Association's ban of trans people from being a part of teams. The campaign is led by a South London-based team called Gold Diggers FC, who will deliver the letter to the Football Association headquarters at Wembley today, following a 12-mile fundraising walk. The group has already raised more than £7,000, which will be split between the club and the trans-led charity Not A Phase. The campaign was created following the UK Supreme Court's ban of transgender people within sports in ruling the definition of a woman as that of a, quote, biological woman, end quote. The UK's Football Association followed with a ban of transgender people in sports. And the UK's national cricket body has also followed suit. In the open letter created by Gold Diggers FC, the team wrote, quote, "The Supreme Court's decision is and will be a stain on the country's reputation. As a national governing body, you had an opportunity to show leadership, empathy, and humanity. Instead, what we see is a pitiful and weak response to the mounting pressure," end quote. And these have been the news headlines for Monday, the 5th of May, 2025.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Body bubble tea, body bubble tea, hey, yeah. Blind, I was blind away all our songs to complicate the piano and guitar chords. Sing about kissing the midnight on a rooftop. Saying you'll escort me to your bedroom, right? We'll be watching movies all night. Know how to grind and sit by them, vote that shit. They not no makeup on, so stuff on my head. You look into my eyes.
Yeah, I prefer this you instead.
You make me feel like a natural woman for money. You make me feel like I have some emotion for fun. Like I have been on love to
bubbles be, body bubbles be, yeah, 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 yeah. You're pretty much my controller. Let me see you, robot. Haven't seen you in a minute, and I don't like dust stuff. Didn't know that I was keen on jazz. Rapidly rap, a street tappity tap. Quit when I was 11 to work on my tennis. Now all I do is run from love, and I'm guessing Galileo, cause all I do is reach for the stars and Mars, and Venus, Cerebrina. We'll be watching movies all night. You know how to grind and shit by the boat. That shit tight in. They not no makeup on, still scuff on my head. You look into my eyes. You, I prefer to see you instead. You make me feel like a natural woman, but money. You make me feel like I have some emotion, but money. Like I have enough love to share with someone, but money. You make me feel. Driving on a 480 reaction, slow but crazy. Smoking on that purple hazy. Pick me up at a friend's house, 40-minute drive. Stopped at McDonald's, got a Happy Meal. Extra pickle, despicable me, toy inside. Yeah. It's my first time, I never kissed a guy. Like I've held his hand and maybe kissed the cheek a couple times. But none of that lip lip tongue shit, yeah. Never done none of that lip lip tongue shit. You reach into my mind, talk about the universe and how it ain't fair. That I want some blue hair, your mom and daddy don't care. Get all the girls' attention, and you blush when I say, yeah, I know. And the white girls want your baby, and the white girls want your baby. Not to be a slave, then when's the last time you hooked a boy with a fresh face? Ever seen his face lately? You told me how his woman took your place, but you forgot all about that and asked me how was my day. Yeah, I like that. And this is exactly how you make me feel. You make me feel like a natural woman for money. You make me feel like I have some emotion for money. Like I have enough love to share with someone for money. You make me feel like a natural woman, yeah.
That was Natural Woman by Kaid. We love her.
That was a nice song. We just thought we'd talk a little bit about the election and voting. I just wanted to say a couple of things about my experiences voting.
Yeah.
Last week, because I had an interesting time. Yeah, I live in Wales, so I voted on Thursday evening. And Peter Clear was there. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. I right at the start of my voting thing, I was talking to a Labour a volunteer handing out pamphlets for the ARP at the start, and I was talking to him about Peter Khalil, and they were just like shaking their head at everything. Like, they just didn't believe anything I said. I'm like, these things that I'm saying are true, and you can Google them. Anyway, it got to the point where, like, I got pretty close to the line, to the actual building, and that's when I saw Peter Khalil himself, and he, like, I did think it was weird at the start, but, like, there were two people around him the whole time as he, like, tried to hand a pamphlet to, like, literally everybody and try to shake their hands, and I don't think many people were that responsive to that. Anyway, but then I saw Samantha Ratnam, the Greens candidate for Wales.
Yeah.
And she was saying that the two people standing around Peter Khalil were his security. Yeah, which was really interesting and kind of scary. Like, the Labour candidate has to have security just to hand out pamphlets at a voting booth. But they, like, it was super incognito. Like, one of them was wearing, like, an Australian Manufacturing Workers Union shirt, and the other one was just wearing, like, a Vote for Labour shirt. So you wouldn't have really known, I guess, unless things kicked off.
Very discreet.
Very discreet. A little bit scary as well. And there was also someone handing, I don't know if this happened to you, Hannah, when you voted, because we live in the same seat, but, like,
yeah,
there was a satirical, someone was handing out satirical pamphlets.
No.
For like pro-nuclear satirical pamphlets.
No, I didn't see that.
And it's a, I mean, I didn't know this because I don't have TikTok, but like, apparently they've been posting stuff on TikTok about it, and it's like a person in drag.
Yes. No, I've seen that.
The drag is obviously like really convincing because it just looks like a conservative white woman.
Yeah.
And they came up to me like, and they just handed me a pamphlet saying like, go nuclear. And I'm like, what is this? Like, is this real? Like, I legitimately thought it was real. And then, you know, I was talking to them. I'm like, you know, nuclear is never going to work, and it's so expensive, and it's dangerous, and, you know, polluting indigenous land for nothing. And, but then I was talking to this person. They're like, they're telling me to like, yeah, keep going, keep going, keep going. Like, keep telling me to like, keep talking.
Yeah.
And it's obviously getting me frustrated because they're not even saying anything. They're just looking at me, telling me to keep going. And I look behind them and there's someone filming me.
Oh.
And then luckily, like the voter, like person behind me in line was like, hey, it's satire.
Mm.
And then I was like, oh, okay. Because I was like, there's no way this is real.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, it could have been.
I've seen their their like fake campaign posters around Brunswick.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny.
It got me.
Yeah,
it got me. So if someone sees me on TikTok talking about like why we shouldn't have nuclear, then you know that it was me waiting in line to vote.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about that because it was slightly embarrassing. It was very like person who has a radio show at 3CR community radio coded. Yeah, anyway, anybody else have anything to add about their experiences voting or any other thoughts on the election?
Yeah, I also, I'm in Wills and I also did early voting and saw, yeah, Peter Khalil and Sue Bolton and Samantha Ratnam. And I didn't get a handshake from Peter Khalil. I think because I was wearing a Palestine badge. Yeah, it's a funny little place, the voting line.
Yeah.
But I didn't get my democracy sausage, and I went to find my sausage on the day as well. I just went to voting places to try and get democracy sausage.
And after you'd voted.
Yeah. And I really wanted a honey joy, and I was looking all day to find a honey joy and a sausage, and they all sold out.
Honey joy? Do yeah. they usually have those?
Yeah, sometimes they do. And the little, the chocolate crackles. I really wanted a little baked good.
Didn't Did you get find it. Any?
No.
Maybe it was because like it was three. Early voting.
No, but I went on the day when it wasn't early voting on
Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. To like a few.
So you'd already voted, yeah. And then on Saturday you walked around voting booths. That's hilarious. That is so funny. Well,
unsuccessful mission.
I'm sorry to hear you didn't find a democracy sausage. Something is really wrong.
It's okay, I'll have to make my own.
Yeah, maybe we should now move to play speeches from the second part of the speech is actually, we had the first part last week from the rally supporting harm reduction and evidence-based healthcare, standing against scapegoating, stigma, and the criminalization of people who use drugs. If listeners didn't know, this rally was held last Sunday, the 27th of April, last Sunday, countering a network of North Richmond business owners, property developers, and local career politicians holding a rally in North Richmond, which was promoting a quote-unquote demand for action in relation to quote-unquote safety concerns about people who use drugs, part of an ongoing campaign targeting North Richmond's medically supervised drug consumption space and the demonizing of people who use this service. Here are the speeches.
So just thought, hello, my name's Fiona Patton, and certainly I was championing the introduction of this facility, along with Judy Ryan and the rest of you here. Thank you all for coming. It is so wonderful to see us all here supporting our community, supporting people who use drugs, supporting a good life for everyone, supporting good health care for everyone. And as Judy says, no, we're not perfect, but humans aren't perfect. And we can keep working to provide compassionate access to health care for everyone here in North Richmond, but also throughout Victoria. Thanks very much.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I feel that we need a few more voices from people that actually live near the injecting room. My family has lived in North Richmond, in York Street, since 1977. I went to the old Richmond High School for 2 years. I also went to a primary school in Yarra Park, which is now closed. But my family's had a long association with this area. My father was one of the ones who protested when they pulled down the old houses around this area to put up the flats. In his dog collar, because he was a minister, and he was moved to try to support people who lived in this area. I can tell you from personal experience, there have always been drugs in North Richmond, around the flats and around this area since my family lived here. In the past, it used to be sort of smaller stuff. But when we first moved in 1977, we were robbed so often that we kind of made a joke about it, saying we should just leave the key in the door and make it a bit easier. We had a very old television, and every time we got robbed, they kept leaving the television behind. I've lived around here for a long, long time. I've never been personally afraid or felt attacked or felt that I've been harassed or intimidated by anyone using the room or anyone nearby. The worst speech and behaviour I've seen has actually come from people who oppose the room. And I think quite a few of us really have had that experience. Dog poo mysteriously appearing unbagged in my bins for weeks on end. I only noticed it because my neighbour asked me, what's going on with your bin at the moment? After I'd made a bit of a smart-ass comment on social media about not feeling the need to take photos of dog poo all over the streets, even though I didn't like it because it would make me a bit foolish. I've been in the MSIR several times. I've never met with anything but kindness and appreciation, gratitude, and I think we really ought to be supporting it. I was in favour of the MSIR from the beginning, and I was at the rally that called for it to be established. And I think it is a crying shame that we did not get one in the city and we do not have more of them, because since it was established, there's been far fewer syringes. I haven't personally had to call an ambulance for someone outside my house. We haven't had anyone shooting up in the garden. It's made a huge difference in a positive way, and I wish that we could support and have many, many more of them. Having only one to have all the problems in one small area is not fair on the residents, and it's not fair on people who want to use the room either. So let's keep going, and please do not believe what you read on social media and what you see on certain news outlets, because it's a whole pack of lies in my opinion, and it doesn't reflect my personal experience.
I've been a Richmond resident for over 15 years, and I can attest that the MSIR is being blamed for all of North Richmond's woes. And as people have touched upon, North Richmond has always had heaps of drug use. this is not, you know, the honeypot effect as they carry on. You know, there was no drug use before IMSA. I mean, what a lie. Bridge Road and Victoria Street shopping precincts have both been dead for about 10 years.
Longer.
Then there was COVID, then the cost of living crisis to make things worse, and they still remain, you know, pretty dead. Richmond has more pubs, safe drinking houses, than any other suburb in NAM. I live within a few metres of two of them, and I deal with pissed people all the time. Every weekend I see men pissing in public on my street, but I'm not whinging to the city of Yarra about it, because, you know, I moved to Richmond. I chose to move to Richmond. That's the inner city. People use alcohol like they use other substances. Now, addiction is just a construct, an arbitrary construct of the drug law. Addicts is a term relegated to the criminalised and perpetuates the idea that their drug use is wrong and needs the intervention of the state, whether non-consensual rehabilitation programs or imprisonment. Unlike those men pissing in my street. It's an arbitrary construct. You know, people who take, say, Seroquel every day, for example, they're not considered addicts. So it's an arbitrary construct. And the way we criminalise people is an arbitrary construct. You know, the whole notion of innocent people and guilty people, those goalposts keep changing, and they'll always keep changing. So that's why we have to fight for everybody. Look what's happening in the United States. You know, people on green cards are now criminalised. So, you know, it's just, So, by the way, it looks like they've changed their march route. So, that's a good one for us, hey? So they're not having to annoy the people of using IMSA. So, what's going on here today with that rally by the Victorian Street Traders is a war against the most marginalised people who are being scapegoated, you know, for the vagaries of capitalism. This is like the drug war. This is a war on drug users. And we've become so numb to that term, the drug war, but make no mistake, it is a war on community members. These Richmond residents, those, you know, ones over there, don't speak for me. We have a strong community here, right-wing Bronx aside. Thank you.
Hi. I was only just planning on talking, on, so I don't have much prepared, but I live really close to the safe injection site. I live like less than 10 minutes away from it. And I just wanted to say, drug users are people who are struggling, kind people in my community trying to get through. They are my neighbours and friends, people who are good-hearted and well-intentioned, who have a vice. Drug users are people who deserve space in our society. Trying to push them out of public view disregards their right as humans to exist in the same spaces that we do. Trying to take away safe use sites actively pushes for the stigmatization and death of people suffering from addiction. People will use drugs whether they have a safe place to or whether it's legal. Safe use sites save lives. Drug addiction is something anyone can be subject to under the right conditions, and you are infinitely closer to being a drug addict
than a politician or a billionaire. People fall into addiction without choosing to. People who are prescribed drugs from their doctor and not given the support to get off them effectively. The devil is in the dosage, not the drug. The police are making a concerted effort to terrorise and displace the local homeless and drug-affected population of North Richmond by declaring designated areas, extending the period of those declarations, and using their resources to search and displace homeless people who have nowhere to go. The removal of the safe injection room is another way drug-affected people are being targeted in North Richmond. Drug users deserve our compassion, not to be ostracized. Drug users have a right to safety, and drug users have a right to exist.
Hi everyone, my name is Zeal. I'm here with my four children and my partner. I grew up in Richmond, I was born here. I went to school in Nicholson Street when I was, you know, 4 and 6 and 8 and 10. I was wandering the streets of Richmond and Abbotsford. My experience was there were plenty of people using heroin and other drugs in the city at the time, around the 2000s. It's been here for a very long time. I learned at an early age how to call 000 and call for an ambulance because of the number of people I'd seen who had overdosed on the street and who were at risk of losing their lives. That was quite distressing for me as a small person, but I also thought it was important already at the time to be taking good care of those people because I didn't want to see people dying on the streets. When I was sick of it again, because I grew up, I had needles in my backyard because there was nowhere really safe to place needles. I had people who needed to come and use the tap in my house because there was nowhere safe to get clean water to clean their materials. I've seen a lot of that, and I actually got really pissed off about that, that there was nowhere safe and supportive for people who did want to use those drugs to be able to do so safely, which is why I started writing some letters myself to my representatives, and I remember quite vividly speaking to Richard Wynn, who told me in about 2011 or 2012 that the Labor Party had supported a supervised injecting facility at the 99 or 2000 election for Collingwood and Richmond, but then had reneged because it wasn't convenient, but that it might be coming through at a later stage, which I thought was pretty cowardly. I thought if it's a good idea, which it's been shown to be internationally, it's always a good idea, and that's not just a matter of political convenience, it's actually a matter of whether it's good policy. So I did move away for some years, but I was thrilled to see that action had been taken and that progress had been made, and I was so delighted when the supervised injecting facility was opened. And I do now live here again with now my children, and I do go and visit my mum at my old house where, you know, with my back lane, which used to have needles and things in it, which it doesn't anymore. I don't see people on the streets who have accidentally overdosed because they didn't have the support to use the drug appropriately, or if they had a bad dose or something like that. So I do think really things are looking a lot better for our community, and I'm really glad that people who want to use drugs are actually able to be supported to do so safely, and can access potentially some programs that might support them as well if there are other things going on in their lives that are part of why they are using drugs. I also wanted to say that I think the point about the number of pubs and alcohol establishments around here is pretty apt. Alcohol is a very dangerous drug. I don't have a problem with people using it, but I do have a problem with people pretending that there's only one kind of drug around. There are lots of drugs that people use safely in pubs. They're supervised, they're supported to use it appropriately. I think that's a pretty appropriate model for all sorts of drugs. And I'm very glad that we in Richmond actually are leading the way and do have a good facility for people to do so. And I'm proud to be in Richmond with my children, knowing that we've got safe, good public policy for everyone in the community. Thank you very much.
So it's up to us, the people. We need a treaty in this country. We need the end to the war in this country. And the only way we can do that is through a peace treaty. Not the one you see in Victoria, not the one you see in Queensland, not the one you see in the Northern Territory, because they talk treaty and still lock our people up. They still kill our people. They still desecrate our land and our water. A treaty means peace. A treaty means equality. And a treaty means justice. Thank you.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
CR is Radical Radio, and that means more than just alternative current affairs and political coverage.
We're radical because we're an independent media outlet owned and operated by the community.
We're radical because we give communities the control of their own shows with their own music in their own languages.
We're radical because we provide a media platform for communities to build their own power to create social change.
Become a subscriber and support Radical Radio. Call us on 03 9419 8377 or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
We just heard the second part of the speeches from the rally supporting harm reduction and evidence-based healthcare, standing against stigma, scapegoating, and the criminalization of people who use drugs, from the rally that was held last Sunday on the 27th of April. Now we're going to be hearing a segment from a recent episode of Indigenous Rights Radio's Cultural Survival podcast, featuring Indigenous activist Simon Witbooi, or Nama. Simon discusses historical and contemporary racial discrimination and the place of the Khoi and San people in South Africa in the context of the International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. The International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination is observed annually on the March 21st in commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre, where police killed 69 people demonstrating against racist apartheid pass laws in apartheid South Africa. To follow the work of Indigenous Rights Radio, go to rights.culturalsurvival.org.
So when somebody asked me what is my thoughts on discrimination against indigeneity or the indigenous Khoi and San people in South Africa, today it goes back. And, you know, because for us it was always twi outsedi ayepka, which means that, you know, for us it's always God's purpose within the now. And the now includes both the past, the immediate now, and the coming now. So discrimination is in all those three facets of the oneness of who we are. And it is important to understand, if we look at discrimination in the book way, yes, if you look at laws, it is discriminating against us because of the letter aspect as one a road I can venture in terms of discrimination. When I say law, if you just look at the acts that has been signed in the last couple of years, if you look at the expropriation law that has been passed, you know, it really kind of circumvent the truth of the actual matter when it comes to ancestral land. Me coming from the Richtersveld and the surrounding areas, the broader Namakwa land, which is mineral rich, and not just mineral rich. If you look at the broader Cape Town, it is fauna, flora, weather, the sand itself, gases, you know, the seas, the sea life, almost everything in nature. It's what people would have thought and say in general is like an Eden. So for us, it has always been, an Eden in that type of way. But because of these things, there's a lot of discrimination that has happened, and it's still there. And if you look at discrimination with regards to law, you will find that the cutoff dates, you can look at that for the land claims issue that was passed at 1913. If you look at, which is a big issue for us, and again, we don't mind it really, because again, for us, authority is not something that's upheld in a letter, you know. That is really a, let's call it for now, a Western concept that crept in, and that somehow our African brothers, along with some of our own, has accepted in some sort of form or fashion. But within our understanding of what culture is, that can't be, it's immovable, it's immovable in its truth, and it stays because it's both spiritual and practical, natural as well. So that 1913 date, for instance, is a huge discrimination against us. If you look at the word colored also, which was placed there with the specific ideology behind it and motives, which has further divided our people. If you, even now, today, because our younger people who has grown accustomed to the culture of that word, which I was and am part of and proudly part of, you know, I created even a song with other brothers of mine called I'm a colored. And I was proudly and am still proudly of that particular time frame in my life. But once you get truth about why it was enforced and on us, you will understand that it's really, in essence, discriminative, again, if that's a word, to the indigenous people, which is us, obviously, in that fashion. So that is but two things, if I look at it, with regards to law, discrimination with regards to equality itself, just in a broader sense, with outside of law, for instance, we always have this idea that, if there's no respect, then there's no conversation. And so there's no inclusion if the attempt from the person in front of us is not including, us or the person, both parties, at the onset of any ideology that needs to be rolled out in a space where the authoritarians are still living and existing. And most of the templates that's used, whether it be structural, if you look at architecture, when it has to do with commerce, when it has to do with agriculture, when it has to do with almost everything, has not been inclusive when it comes to respect. So again, those things can and they did continue with us being included in general. And when I say us, I'm not talking about puppets or certain so-called puppets, let me put it that way, or people that were specifically chosen to speak for us, which is a very wrong thing for us in culture, because for us, if you look at what the coat of arms says, it's always which is an inclusive ideology that we not aspire to. A lot of countries out there, their slogans or their coat of arms or it says something of the sort, you know, Eendracht maak mag, diverse unite, or unity in diversity, which is a longing, harmony is a longing of humanity. But it was found here in general. So when you apply that, it is inclusive of nature in general. Now, I don't want to go too deep into the past that was found here, because once people started to write down the letters, it was that specific context of the day. which was not our finest day, you know, people walking in skins and in the sun and, you know, les dakhapluwe and all of that. That wasn't our finest moment in general, you know. You know, like the Mayan or the Aztec people or so forth, you'll find with nature and over years, the people themselves, they also change, you know, with weather, people change. And then with the introduction to new systems, they adapt. And that's one of the great things, particularly about my people, the Nama, our adaptive nature to what is presented before them. It is a very spiritual thing. You know, if somebody comes here with horses, which they did come with, we will find ourselves to become great horsemen or horse riders or particularly with horses or so forth. It's an adaptive nature. When guns came in, our people were some of the best shots. You know, my dad, my grandfather used to take guns from people who tried to shoot in just one shot, you know. Let's say in the Makwaland, gooi die ouens om 'n draaie kraan oop en toe, you know, which is kind of the skill set, but it speaks of our adaptive nature. So culture to us, for instance, is not the definition of the Western context. It is a growing situation or it's a growing thing. If I don't have a better word now, but it's something that it's like glory. It multiplies, it adapts to the specific nature. And the reason why we adapt is because, as you could see, there were no real structures built and so forth when we were found here, what our forefathers were found here, because we live a spiritual life first before it is practical. And spiritually, we always believe that there is, you know, we can survive here. So what survival is to other people is simple life to us. It's like, you know, it was presented in a way, if you look at the desert, which was the harshest circumstances for people to survive. For us, it was just simply put a space and time where in the utmost circumstances, you know, we will be able to live and sustain and stay there, you know, maintain in that position. And it's never something that will end there for us. It's never a conclusion. It's never the finality. That's why the nomadic, what people call the nomadic nature, it is more of, it's in all of our facets of life, you know. We didn't just use the herbs in this particular way that they wrote in a specific context. It is continuous in nature. It spirals. And spiral says, yes, it may be a circle, but it's a different circle every time, you know. And that is spiritual for us. So I don't want to go too deep. But yeah, so those type of wording, it is very discriminative, again, if that is a word, to us. Because, you know, people put it in their context and then bring templates, and then you have to fit in that specific template.
The Victorian government is helping our children dream even bigger by delivering free kinder. Free kinder means a saving of up to $2,500 per child per year for Victorian families. Enroll for 2025. Speak with your preferred kinder service or local council today about how to register for a place. Or find out more at vic.gov.au/kinder. Best start, best life. Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
We just heard Simon Whitboy talking about racial discrimination and on his podcast. And next up, we'll be playing a speech from Basil El Gaddis at yesterday's Free Palestine rally. Basil is a Palestinian man, son of Palestinian refugee parents, a civil engineer and active advocate in Palestinian community in Naam. Yesterday's protest marked May Day and International Workers' Day. This International Workers' Day marks a reaffirmed commitment to ending the supply of arms to Israel and Australia's complicity in the production and export of weapons parts.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We start by acknowledging the land which we meet today and extend that acknowledgement to the Aboriginal elders, past, present, and emerging, and any Aboriginal brothers or sisters that may be with us today. Over the last 24 hours, about 18 million people on this land decided who should run the country for the next 5 years. As much as some of us may have hoped for a better result, we can't deny the fact, once you zoom in at the details and look closely, that we have achieved a lot, and the efforts and the fierce campaigning efforts of our brothers and sisters in this movement and the wider community have resulted in some really good gains. And as our sister Noor mentioned earlier, Dutton is out, which is a very good result, but there is many other good results. The issue of Palestine has contributed to major swings in votes in some areas, most notably in the seat of Wells, where Peter Khalil resides. As of now, we don't know exactly whether he'll go to the dustbin of history or not, but it's a major achievement to have a swing in votes of 5% away from him as a result of the efforts of everyone here today and everyone else. Something to be really proud of. What we see as well in the results, a general shift away from right-wing politics, away from division, and an inclination towards a more progressive and inclusive parties. We see the fruits of campaigning efforts by our brothers and sisters that have resulted in a larger and wider awareness of the Palestinian struggle and other social justice issues that impact us. On the other side, one thing to be aware of and to note is to see the rise of right-wing politicians and right-wing parties coming up. A swing of about 3% so far is a major concern that we need to fight and we need to be aware of. If history was to serve as a lesson, all you have to look at how quick the Nazi Party rose to power in the 30s in Germany. And a quick look at elections and parliaments throughout Europe and in the US to see right-wing politics rising very quickly. So we have to keep an eye on these bigots and stop them from taking power on this land by any means necessary. What we learn from the election results is that change can happen. It might not come in our way in the way we wished, but it can and it will happen. But it requires a great deal of effort, a hard work, a lot of campaigning and a lot of hard work. And we've got years ahead of us to achieve that. In the same way, people have fought for the conditions that we have in the workplace today of 8-hour working days 100 years ago. We need to fight for Palestine. We need to fight for social justice issues, and we need to use every avenue to achieve those goals and demands. More importantly, we need to continue our fight against fascist, racist, and right-wing political parties and ideologies, to ensure that those social justice issues that are kept at the forefront of our political debate and maintain the rights that we enjoy today and keep them for our children and the generations to come. This fight needs to be a realistic one and have a vision to work towards. Commitment and acknowledgement to the context of this land which we live in, so that policies can change and so that those policies can better impact people overseas, as the case is in Palestine. This fight needs to broaden our public awareness, and we need to build a bigger base in Australia or in this land to make the public aware of those threats and to fight alongside us on those social justice issues. We need to engage with our families and friends and work colleagues. We need to start these conversations at every single avenue, in our gatherings and family events, in our workplaces, at every opportunity that we have. This fight needs participation, education, lobbying, and spreading awareness to the masses, to utilize every avenue possible and do every effort, no matter how small it may seem, to keep the torch of liberation burning. This fight needs unity. We need to unionize. We need to unite. We need to face those challenges as one single body. We need to work together. We need to put our differences aside, and we need to work together at every avenue so that those goals can be achieved to the benefit of everyone. This fight is part of a long battle, a big, long battle against the degenerate capitalist system that puts human life below a dollar. It's the same system that puts the dollar over human life that massacred the Aboriginals on this land. The same system that colonized the planet and stole its land and its resources and destroyed its ecosystems for the benefit of corporations and shareholders. It's the same system that wants you to work harder, longer hours for less pay, that wants you to compromise on your values and rights, that wants you to keep struggling to pay your rent and mortgage and bills and medical expenses and keep you in debt so that multi-billion dollar corporations can get bigger and shareholders and billionaires can have deeper pockets and increase their wealth. It's the same system that divided nations and drew up imaginary borders and started wars under the guise of religion, ethnicity, and nationalism to feed a global military industry complex worth an annual spend of over $1.43 trillion globally. It's the same system that watches today a live stream genocide and starvation committed by a rogue apartheid state against the civilian population for over 18 months and fails to do anything to stop it. It's the failure, that failure, or as you might want to call it, unwillingness of this system to bring the genocide in Gaza to stop the killing and the starvation of Palestinian kids or even let food into this Gaza Strip is a mere reflection of its true purpose. To take from me and you, to line up the pockets of the rich and keep you busy at the expense of human struggle and suffering. It's a reflection of their lack of care about your cost of living crisis, your hiring problems, and any interest in your struggles. It's a reflection of the double standards, deception, and the moral bankruptcy designed to market a false facade to line up the pockets of the rich. A reflection of a degenerate capitalist system that doesn't care about the Palestinian children being killed, doesn't care about international human and inhuman law, as much as it doesn't care about your struggle to make ends meet for as long as there is a dollar to be made. For now, we keep fighting. For now, we keep marching. For now, we keep building. Today, it's a swing of votes. Next time, we win more seats in government. And after that, we change the policy of this land, and eventually we see a free Palestine from the river to the sea. Palestine will be free. Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Enough. Can't call enough.
colonize my black mind. And from a dream time I go back. They commit a genocide through my tracks. They raped our mothers less than my black. They bought the violence when they attacked. I ain't here to start trouble, I'm just here to state facts. You can't paint me how you wanna paint cracks. And I'm tied to my mob, got my mob on my back. Waratahs are covered in blood, whitewashing our history to cover it up. Proof is all in the pudding, cause this nation couldn't give a fuck about us. We survive unseated, undivided. Our people stay fighting cause the flame is ignited. We stay righteous, we cannot be silenced, cause silence is violence, the reason we're divided. And they choose not to digest the truth, instead they just go ahead and delude our youth. Only love your system cause it just suits you. Give a fuck about the law, yeah, I'd rather grassroots. Black to the bone, black to the busy. Mob on my back, yeah, they all rock with me. Barker in my blood, that river flow through me. I'm matriarchal bloodline 120. Black. This for the black matriarchs. This for my sisters who lived in the dark. This for my sisters who carry our past on their shoulders. This is for black matriarchs. This is for all of our women. This is for all of our children. Couldn't care less about the monarch. I'ma set fire to the kingdom, I'm coming for them. More hail to black matriarchs. I'm the pain and the proof, the history that lays out the truth. And they couldn't walk a mile in our shoes. Tell us to go bush when they all introduce. Fuck it, we've been here for too long. Matriarchy blood, yeah, I've been built strong. Songlines deep, yeah, got me singing songs. Cause I can't forget where I came from. Barkindji country, Mungo man. Pass it to my kids, tell them this your land. I came from the dirt, go back in red sand. There's a river, Nunku, I'm proud of who I am. Creator, creator me tough. And I'm calling out all your bluffs. Saying the past is all in the past. Well, that dark past still lives in my mum. I stay radical, I know the truth. Couldn't kill my ancestors, I'm the proof. I know I still got some screws loose. But my third eye's open and I'm looking right through. Looking at you, Nunku right here, gonna do what it do. So my little black seeds ain't gonna prove shit to you. Nachi sent me, gone bud, what do? 3% me, hold it down for the few. This for the black matriarchs. This for my sisters who lived in the dark. This for my sisters who carry our past on their shoulders. This is for black matriarchs. This is for all of our women. This is for all of our children. Couldn't care less about the monarch. I'ma set fire to the kingdom, I'm coming for them. More hail to black matriarchs.
You know, I have a culture. I am a cultured person. Don't try and suppress me. And don't call me a problem. I have never left my country. I am not the problem.
The Victorian government is helping our children dream even bigger by delivering free kinder. Free kinder means a saving of up to $2,500 per child per year for Victorian families. Enroll for 2025. Speak with your preferred kinder service or local council today about how to register for a place. Or find out more at vic.gov.au/kinder. Best start, best life. Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
The war on Palestine has not stopped. Palestinians need self-determination. Gaza must be free of Israeli occupation forces, have unconditional access to aid and reconstruction. 17 years of Israeli siege must end.
The West Bank needs the violence and attacks by the Israeli army and settlers to stop, and an end to the occupation and apartheid.
Your support to end the war on Gaza to bring peace, justice and freedom to all of Palestine is needed more than ever.
Join the 77th Nakba Day Rally on Sunday, the 18th of May, 12 noon, outside the State Library on Swanson Street.
With Netanyahu and Trump threatening to ethnically cleanse Gaza and annex the West Bank, we all need to stand up and say no.
Nakba Day Rally, Sunday, the 18th of May, midday, State Library.
With your support, Palestine will be free, from the river to the sea.
Free Palestine Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
The struggle for justice in Palestine is a universal fight, a resonating echo of the battles waged by oppressed people across the globe.
We'll be right back. mama, been trying to call you, how you doing, and all those that we know. I am watching in despair of this bombing, this war that they've declared. Hope you're holding on to all this madness. So many children lost, what are our chances? Western media spreading lies about our people trying to dehumanize. Papa, how are you feeling? Seems like this nightmare never ends. Those grandpa stories becoming true. Our pride and glory tells me that we'll get through. Hope you're holding on to all this madness. So many children lost, what are our chances? Western media keeps spreading lies, but our people try to dehumanize.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song was Letter to the Martyrs by Chekik 97 from Lisbon. And before that, of course, we heard Black Matriarch by Barker. Listeners, beware that this next segment may contain audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and discussion of deaths in custody. The segment will run for around 15 minutes, so feel free to tune back in after 15 minutes or so. But if at any point you find the content distressing, please call 13 Yarn on 139276. Today, the 5th of April 2025, marks the opening of the Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience exhibit at the Heidi Museum of Modern Art, situated on the Birrarung. The exhibit presents works by Vernon Arkey, Gordon Bennett, Destiny Deacon, Julie Dowling, Jimmy Pike, and Judy Watson, addressing the overrepresentation of First Nations people within the carceral system and the crisis of deaths in custody here in so-called Australia. These works will be shown alongside pieces created by former and currently incarcerated First Nations people via the Torch program to bolster connection to country and culture. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men are 17 times more likely to be incarcerated than their non-Indigenous counterparts, while Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women are 27 times more likely to be incarcerated compared to non-Indigenous women, despite the fact that First Nations people make up less than 4% of the continent's population. 65% of all young people in detention across the continent are Indigenous, despite only making 6.6% of the total population of 10 to 17-year-olds. The Monday Breakfast Show is now joined by Barkindji man Kent Morris, who is the curator of the Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience exhibit, as well as the founder and creative director of the Torch program. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you so much for waking up early to join us. Ken, do you want to just start off by telling us about the process of putting the exhibit together?
Yeah, look, it was a long process. It's an idea I've had in my mind for a long period of time around how to gather all of these extraordinary voices together from across multiple generations, language groups across the country, across all genders, and just to raise a chorus, not only of concern, but a call to action of acknowledging that this is an ongoing issue around the hyper-incarceration of our mob and the crisis of deaths in custody, but also to build awareness of community-led initiatives like The Torch and others around the country are making significant impacts to address this, but there just needs to be a whole lot of greater investment and empowerment from government for community-led solutions that are working to create broader impacts, and so we can try and just address an issue that just isn't being addressed in any significant or meaningful way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we only see the problem getting worse, right? It was pretty harrowing doing the research for this interview and finding just how much the incarceration rates have increased over the past few years.
Well, very true. So we don't see anything improving. And every time, you know, another Closing the Gap report comes out, I think we all just kind of, you know, we want to shut our eyes and ears and just say, you know, this process has been put in place. It's failing, and it's been failing for a long time. But what isn't failing are, again, First Nations-led solutions and initiatives that are creating significant impact but just don't have the weight of support or investment to really make the broad impacts we need to, so that for 4% of the population, we make up 4% of the prison population, not now 36%. And, you know, the continuing crisis of deaths in custody means that things just aren't working. Frank Young is part of the Kulata's Yuta project, and there's a beautiful and powerful work in the exhibition. And as a senior man, Frank, you know, very clearly said, we are very concerned the Whitefella way of locking us up isn't working. And it hasn't been working for a long time, and of course it's been in place since the arrival of the first street, the criminalisation of our people and this hyper-incarceration. So we feel confident within our communities that we have the solutions, and we do, and they're working. But we need to bring everyone along the journey, because we don't want people putting their heads in the sand collectively like the nation does to think that, well, it's just too hard. It just can't be fixed. It's just how it is. We can't think like that because it's our people, you know. So we always have hope and belief and the passion that we can create change, and we are doing that. We just need to do it on a bigger scale, and that requires all of us to come along and advocate for greater support.
Wow, that was really powerful. What role has Bakinji culture played in both creating and curating the art, Kent?
Oh, for me personally?
Mm.
Well, yeah, like in some ways, my journey is reflected in many journeys within the Torch program and within those like Jimmy Pike, Kevin Gilbert, Uncle Jack, and others who are represented in this exhibition. So that fragmentation of family and culture, the heavy impacts of colonisation, of course, the assimilation policy and white Australia policy that separated families. And, you know, I'm a pre-referendum, 1967 referendum, that is, baby. You know, my father was born in 1938. So the complexity of my journey and particularly my father's journey as well meant that for me there wasn't a real, I couldn't really see the future clearly. I didn't really feel, you know, at one point in time that I really wanted to see the next day either. So the support that was wrapped around me from the community here in Victoria really set me on a journey to be able to find my family, get understand where I was from, understand country and culture, to learn cultural practices. It was only through that process that I was enabled to take on a role to build the pilot program back in 2011 that would become now, 14 years later, you know, the Torch program with over 800 mob either currently incarcerated or, you know, finding their way back to community, or those that have already found their way back to community but still require that kind of connection to the program that supported them over the years. So what I've discovered is that once we know who we are and where we're from, and we can heal some of that trauma and put those pieces back together, some more fragmented than others, through many of the, you know, ongoing policies of disconnection and removing people from families and lack of respect for our culture. We have so much potential locked up beyond the prison walls, you know. And so what I've been able to do with my life and not really having any kind of vision or idea, we just see that reflected time and time again in the program, because those in the program built this program. I just went out and had a yarn and said, well, this program's for you, Mom. What do you think would work? And from your lived experiences and what you encountered, what would work in this program? And what that's been able to do is for Mob in that program to kind of, again, find some healing, find some connection, understand more about who they are and where they're from. The first thing people wanted to know was, we need to know more about who we are, our culture, our stories, our designs, and photos of our ancestors. We want to learn our lingo. What are our totems and bush tucker and all of this knowledge that hadn't really been passed down? And then what we see, once that is learned and then expressed through these extraordinary artworks and cultural materials and then shared with the community in exhibitions and other events and licensing, income is generated. You can see that it builds the foundation for releasing or realising the potential that each person has.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a... that sounds like, a really beautiful process to speak to people and actually listen to them. I'm sure that's... yes, I mean, it's not very common within the incarceration system. Tell us a little bit more about the Torch program and how it works to help First Nations people sort of reconnect to culture and community.
Yeah, I think this is a really positive story that can, I guess, empower the broader community to support something that really is working in a very difficult and complex space where we see that the country has a lack of leadership and passion and ability to create inroads here. Here's a program built by those in it. You know, and again, we talk a lot about how important that is, but it's just not done that many times. We do it all the time in terms of, you know, Aboriginal community-controlled organisations, First Nations-led organisations, community initiatives on the ground. It all comes from the grassroots. So those in the program, or those that are experiencing the significant impacts of the legal system in this country and this hyper-incarceration, this, you know, over-policing, there's discriminatory sentencing, there's a whole raft of discriminatory processes that create a completely unlevel playing field. But those that are feeling the impacts of that, all they want is to get out of that unlevel playing field and level it up a bit. And so no one ever said to me in this program, well, we want to be here. We want to have our lives impacted by incarceration time and time again, and all the follow-on and flow effects of that. So the people in the Torch program, and look, we deliver the program into all the prisons in Victoria. I think there might have been 11 or 12 facilities when I started 14 years ago. I think we're now going to 14 or 15. But we go into every facility in Victoria. The program's delivered by First Nations Creative, so everyone that goes into that program is from the community and has a productive and unique creative practice, because a lot of that, the knowledge that is required or has been requested, is not only about learning around culture, it's how do we connect to the arts industry? How can we kind of connect to a place that isn't discriminatory and that we can actually generate an income from to support ourselves, our family? And we know all the flow and effects that has around even, you know, finding safe housing or being able to support the next generation, that, you know, the kids going through school or this, or, you know, to have sporting costs covered, just all of that basic economic stuff that a lot of people take for granted. For those coming out of the prison system, and particularly if you're a First Nations person, there's a real gap in terms of economic stability and security. So the program was built around these ideas. Let's learn culture, let's express it and share it, and let's connect to the arts industry and make some money so we can actually get on with things. And it shows a blueprint for where, if we listen, and this is the part of our culture, deep listening, and that's why, you know, the most recent referendum was so disappointing that people couldn't grasp that concept of, we know what's best for us. And if you listen to what we say, we can solve a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a very good point. I'm also curious to ask, Ken, what the reaction has been when you talk about resilience and how that term really shaped the exhibit.
Yeah, look, it was very important to have a journey, have this narrative and have this story. We must acknowledge what's happened and what it continues to happen in terms of the dire statistics and the negative impact, but we also must understand that this is not just the statistics, this is impacts on our people, on, you know, living, breathing people. So statistics are damning, but when you relate that to actually living people and, you know, a community that's, again, just less than 4% of the population but represents 36% of the prison population, well, you start to see there's a very important human side here that we must address and not shy away from. We must acknowledge this. But what we must also acknowledge is that First Nations communities and organisations, our people have the passion, we have the drive, we have everything at stake to try and resolve this. So we do create unique, inventive initiatives that have significant impacts. I mean, we have a recidivism rate, for example, of below 20% for those in the program. Now, we're talking, you know, at any one time, 650 to 800 people in the program. And so that's a significant reduction from the 55 to 60% recidivism we experience in our community. And we've got to remember the driving force for those in the program that designed this program and the torch has stood beside them since day one was, we want to stop coming back in here and we want to free ourselves from this system that just keeps, as, you know, Uncle Pat Dodson said, the criminal legal system in this country sucks us up like a vacuum cleaner and deposits us in correctional facilities. We've got to, you know, obviously we need systemic change and a whole lot of structural change to stop that happening. But we've already got so much mob in prison and it's ongoing. So the current initiative or the current concern and focus is on, well, let's get those that are already in prison out of there and stop going in there. And that was what people wanted to do. They don't want to be in prison, want to be with family and community and having productive lives, getting a job and doing all of the things that you want to do. But if you're constantly under the huge glare and pressure of a system that discriminates so strongly against you, that can be very challenging. But these fellows have found a way. And we're 14 years down the track now from that pilot program, and many of those in the program, once they transition away from prison, are finding either careers in the arts or careers in a whole lot of other industries, education and training, because they found a sense of purpose and where they want to go with their lives. And that can be very hard when you're constantly being in this kind of grind of the legal system for our people.
Wow. Well, yeah, it's super important to build these community, like empower people for to work towards self-determination.
Yeah, exactly. And that's entirely what it's about. And at any one time, this will, you know, be an example for people of the passion and commitment for those that are in the program and experiencing that incarceration, how much this process means, is that we have at the Torch Gallery up in Carlton on Elgin Street and online at any one time on our website, 1,200 artworks by those in the program. And now, that sounds like a lot, but we have to limit the artists to two artworks online or at the gallery at a time, because we just haven't got the capacity to deal with the avalanche of artworks that artists are making. So it's a perfect opportunity for the broader community, which is happening, to, you know, obviously purchase these artworks and support the artists on their journey, because in that way, we're all part of the solution. We've got to all come together to be part of that solution. We can do the heavy lifting, you know, and build the programs and have the ideas and initiatives that work, but we need the other 96% of the population to come on board, and then that gets the collective head out of the sand to say, you know what, we can make a change and we're part of that, and then spread that word to family, a friend, to your workplace, to other organisations. The more we build that that community of support, then the greater impacts we'll have. And then possibly that leads to greater advocacy to government to put more investment behind this. Because currently, where every person who is incarcerated for a year, well, it's $135,000. Here we're talking about a program running on the smell of an oily rag still, but it's saving so much economic waste, you know, out of money that we really need for important initiatives. And that could be reinvested back into greater support for the Torch program, for, as an example.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is just a huge waste of money, and it really isn't working for anybody but the colonial government, right? Can we just have a few moments left of the interview before the show ends? Do you want to just remind listeners where they can find the exhibit and maybe where they can purchase some art as well to support the project?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, let's, you know, collectively get together and make a difference. So the exhibition, The Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience, is at the Heidi Museum of Modern Art. It's out in Bulleen. There are mob ticks available. It's a mob. It's a wonderful place to get out there. They've got a whole lot of, been doing a whole lot of work with Wurundjeri Woiwurrung mob, with the Yalaklanga down at the river's edge. So you can go from the exhibition and, you know, it is confronting in some parts, but then it's also uplifting. It shows what's happening, but what we can do as well. And if it's caused any concern, you can just wander down to that beautiful area where there's been a reculturalisation of the landscape at that place. To support the Torch and the artists in it, just go to thetorch.org.au and have a look at the most amazing array of artworks, again, from artists, I think 80 or 90 language groups from around the country. So there's such an incredible diversity and array of artworks. And there's really, seriously, this isn't a used car salesman kind of pitch here, but there is actually something for everybody. There's, you know, works from beautiful hand-woven earrings around $40, $50 up to, you know, through artworks to $800, $900, $5,000, $10,000. I mean, talk to your, you know, your workplace around how to incorporate this idea into your workplace, into everyday life, that we can support First Nations-led initiatives that are making significant impact. The gallery itself is on 146 Elgin Street, Carlton. You might know it as the old post office if you live around that area. And Tuesday to Thursday, doors open. So come and visit us and have a look at the extraordinary works and support this wonderful initiative.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Kent, and good luck with the initiative and the exhibit.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
And that was Kent Morris, who is the curator of the Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience exhibit, which is now showing at the Heidi Museum of Modern Art, which brings us to the end of the show. So we also heard a speech from Basil Algatis at yesterday's Free Palestine rally, as well as a segment from a recent episode of Indigenous Rights Radio's Cultural Survival Podcast with Indigenous activist Simon Witboy, talking about historical and contemporary racial discrimination in South Africa. And the show started with the second part of speeches from the rally supporting harm reduction and evidence-based healthcare, standing against stigma, scapegoating, and the criminalization of people who use drugs, which brings us to the end of the show. So stay tuned for more great content on 3CR Community Radio, including Women on the Line.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.